This week on Multiverse News, the Silver Surfer will be in the MCU, Dune Part 3 is greenlit, and Supergirl has a director. All of that and more coming up after this.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to Multiverse News, your headquarters for all the news about your favorite fictional universes. My name's J. Scotty St. Clair, and I am excited to be here on what I expect to be a packed and stacked episode. Number one, I call it packed because in terms of news, the week is absolutely jam-packed. And in terms of our panel, it is stacked because it's not just me here. We have the one and only Jay Sisson. What's going on, Jay?
I do like the image of you just doing the show alone, though. Like the idea of like you just kind of being like, hey, well, it's just me tonight. No, really, it is just me. And then just kind of rolling with it. But no, I'm doing good. Yeah, the news just started flying middle to late of last week and just never stopped. So there's a lot of fun stuff to talk about this week.
For sure. And we have the tried and true Haley Hobbs. What's up, Haley?
Oh, I'm here hanging on, hanging in, hanging out.
Right on. I love it. And when I talked about the panel being stacked, we have a very special guest making her debut on Multiverse News, the Supreme Leader herself, Ashley Coffin. Welcome to Multiverse News, Ash. What's up?
Oh, hey. Hey, everybody. Hey. Long time. Listen, don't dangle Dune in front of my face, okay, Haley? I will be here. Very excited to be here, though. Thank you, everybody.
It is the perfect week for you to be on.
Okay, let's kick things off with our first story coming out of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Ozark star Julia Garner will play the Silver Surfer in Matt Shakman's upcoming Fantastic Four movie. Rather than the well-known Norrin Rad version of the comics character, Garner will likely portray Shala Baal, a version of the Silver Surfer found in the Earth-X storyline from the Marvel Comics. Unsurprisingly, the backlash on the internet was almost immediate. What does this departure from the norm perhaps tell us about the story Shakman is directing in Fantastic Four?
I think the popular theory has always been that this Fantastic Four family is in an alternate universe of some kind, which of course makes sense because we're in the multiverse saga. And so that's why it really does make perfect sense that Shala Baal is the Silver Surfer. And yeah, the dads, Brads, and Chads really hated it, but she is a character in Marvel Comics, and I think she's Norrin Rad's lover at one point, and then she's in this Earth-X storyline, which I believe came out in the early 2000s. So there's precedent, the character exists, and even at first I was like, oh, and then I was like, whatever. Like, I trust Marvel. I trust Kevin Feige, and I really trust Matt Shakman because he directed WandaVision, and that show is just, I mean, I'm well on record about how top tier that show is for me in the MCU. So I'm looking forward to it. I personally haven't seen Ozark because, as my husband said, I don't think you would like it. But I know that it's like really highly regarded by the audience that watched it. And we do have a phrase that her character says that I can't repeat on this show that she says in Ozark, but we say
family,
that in our
family
house.
Family show.
All the time. And if you know, you probably know. So I'm looking forward to this in general. Like, I think it'll be good.
Yeah, I think it's like kind of one of those things where everybody sometimes feels like they have to have like a polar, either end of polar opposite reaction to a casting announcement like this. It's like they either have to be like, this is the best thing ever and here's why, or they feel like they have to be like, this is the worst thing ever and here's why. And I think it's totally okay to just, that's kind of how I felt too, Haley, was just kind of be like, okay, you know, like, okay, like, let's see what you got. Like, let's see where this is going. Like, the cast has always kind of, you know, it seems like it's always kind of taken risks a little bit, like, in how it's put together the four main cast members anyway. So to me, like, they've already kind of set the precedent that they're going to do and make the film that they want to make. And I think, like, looking at it, I think these kind of films are at their best when they do take risks and they get a little weird and they just kind of lean into what they want to be. And that's what made WandaVision fun. And I think Matt Shakman kind of has that ability to just be like, here's what I'm doing, here's what I'm making, I'm getting the characters and people that I want, and then I'm leaning into that. As far as Julia Garner goes, she in Ozark, I think she won like 3 Emmys for that role. Wow. And yeah, it was, I mean, she's fantastic in it. She seems almost like by the end she's supposed to be the main character of that show. And she, yeah, I think like this was the role that I guess Anya Taylor-Joy was originally sort of approached for, but I think this totally makes sense as a cool sub in, and I'm excited for her just as somebody who really liked that show when it was on.
See, that's why you come to Multiverse News. You come to Multiverse News for these refreshing and nuanced takes. After spending a week on the internet and seeing all the responses to this casting, I think between the two of you, you hit the nail on the head. I personally am of two minds, and I think that's okay. You know, my reaction is not as negative as the Chads and the Giga Chads out there that we refer to, but I couldn't help but be like a little like, with the complaint of the MCU, which I am not a proponent of, but just seeing that the ammunition was right there, it did make me a little disappointed, because I'm like, you're playing right into their hands. And while their arguments are baseless, it's just going to create that much more cacophony. But I kind of hone in on the fact that, like, who's to say that this is going to be the version of the Silver Surfer that we have going in the MCU going forward? Like, we keep hearing more and more about how this Fantastic Four film may take place in a different dimension, a different continuity, which I think makes a lot of sense with the overall threat being incursions. It would make a lot of sense. And, you know, we've seen Norrin Rad in the past. Whether or not you like that interpretation from The Rise of the Silver Surfer, he's also got a cartoon series that was out there, and he popped up on the Fantastic Four cartoon series. So, you know, whether you want to cry, like, we've been waiting for the Silver Surfer for so long, like, there are, you know, versions of Norrin Rad out there for you to enjoy. But I do think Julia Garner, from what I've seen, she's wildly talented. I kind of hope that she keeps the Southern twang, because I think that would just be so great to have a Herald of Galactus just kind of bring something different. And with the 1960s setting, I think that it would just play kind of nicely as like her already feeling so otherworldly, like to the Fantastic Four. I think that would kind of throw them off a little bit. So all in all, I'm pretty excited for this news, and I kind of can't wait to see how the rest of the cast shakes out from here.
My only downside is she was my pull for Rogue. I wanted her to be Rogue so bad, because with the twang, I thought she would be great. And who knows, maybe she could still be it. She's going to be all silver or whatever they're going to do, you know, chrome-o-matic her. So you never know. But yeah, I was just like, aw, that's all. That was my only like, dang it. She was in my top tier for Rogue. But other than that, I'm like, okay, let's do this.
That's such a good surfboard. It does seem like her character could be short-lived, right? Because the idea is perhaps that this version of the Fantastic Four, they're getting pulled into from their reality into ours. So maybe their reality collapses, like Scotty's saying with incursions. Like, it could be very easily what you're saying, Ash, that she ends up playing dual roles like Gemma Chan.
Totally fine with that. Nobody cared about that with Gemma Chan. Not one person.
That is a good call. Like what you said earlier to Scotty, is that a lot of times they do, like Hollywood does this, they want to distinguish their new properties from old properties of the same thing. So like, mm-hmm. since we have had a Fantastic Four movie with a Silver Surfer in it, the Hollywood looks at that differently than fans. Fans look at that as like, true. Well, I didn't like that movie, so we should just do it again with another Silver Surfer, and it's just the same guy, and it's just, he looks the same and whatever. But like, yeah. Hollywood doesn't look at it that way. Like, they get in and they say, like, we're making a new Fantastic Four. What can we do to distinguish it from other Fantastic Fours? Right. And so it's like, well, maybe when we do the Silver Surfer, we should play with it a little bit. Maybe when we do this character, we should play with it a little bit. And you'll see those kind of different paths get taken. So I think that's a good call. And that's something you just have to remember, is like, that's kind of how Hollywood thinks. They don't really, when they think about reboot, they don't really think about to recycle in the same way that maybe a fan does.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. All right. Shall we move on?
Yeah. So we're going to be talking a little Dune talk.
Mm-hmm. All right. Woo.
Denis Villeneuve and Legendary are officially developing a third installment in the new Dune franchise. The recent sequel, Dune Part 2, is still playing in box offices to great success, having grossed more than $630 million worldwide. Between all of the success, the HBO series focused on the Bene Gesserit is still scheduled to premiere sometime in 2024. We're all excited about this news. Who will the Emperor allow to speak first?
Let's go, Dune Messiah. Let's go. I just can't wait to see everybody crying. I don't know. I don't think the people are prepared, but I do love what Dune has set up to change the story, to possibly make it a better 3-part movie with some of the changes that he's put in place. So I am excited to see where all that's going. I'm also really excited for the Bene Gesserit show. Give me all the space witches. I just want it all. I love that we don't really know that much about it either, and it's supposed to be this year.
Last we knew.
The show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that getting pushed back, probably, just because we haven't heard like a word about it since it was confirmed.
And then what is it? He's going to have to do, didn't Dune say he's going to do nuclear war in between this? So we might have a break.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
And I think that makes sense. His cast is so, especially his young cast, is so highly sought after right now, especially Timotei and Zendaya. Timotei. So they're probably wrapped up in whatever commitments. We know Timmy just signed that big contract with Warner Brothers. So who knows what they're going to shackle him to. As well as this, I'm sure this was part of that contract. They were probably like, absolutely, sign right here, put your fingerprint in some blood and put it right there. Like, you just know. But yeah, this is exciting. Scotty and Ash and I casted a ton about Dune recently, and it was super fun. But we talked about, I think we talked about one of the shows, about Hans Zimmer and how Denis like basically gave him the Dune 3 script before they were even starting to shoot Dune 2. Yeah. So like, he's had this in his back pocket for a while.
Yeah, it certainly felt like an assured thing, kind of like Dune Part 2 was, but it also feels like a no-brainer with the success and the just like absolute mass appeal that Dune Part 2 seems to have. And I will say, you know, given the way that Dune Part 2 ended, I'm at a loss. Like, I really don't know where they're going to take the story, but I am incredibly excited to see it. And I do think, you know, Denis kind of following in the footsteps of Christopher Nolan and kind of doing what he did with the Batman trilogy, where he did one, you know, Batman movie and then took a break to focus on a film for himself. I think that's a great way to do it. I think it keeps creative types like him, like the juices kind of flowing. You don't get any stagnation. And I also think, you know, we as fans, like, I think it's a good lesson to be learned. Like, we don't have to have a sequel like every 3 years, sometimes waiting 4 or 5, even more. Sometimes that makes it even nicer when you finally, hey, bear with me.
I'll be almost
distance
40.
Makes the heart grow fonder.
No matter what that's you all do, Timotei really. Is not going to look older. So just slap a mustache on him and let's move along.
I'm really fascinated by like what they're going to do with the source material, because there's so much source material out there. And it's like, if you're thinking about this in terms of a trilogy, what does that look like? Like, how much do you pull from it? How much do you just adapt page to screen? Like, I don't know. That's fascinating to me. And I think he really does have his work cut out for him there in terms of like how to kind of pull that story into a trilogy conclusion, if that's what it's ultimately going to be. I don't know. But yeah, I love the eye roll of like they're asking him at the Dune 2 premiere, is like, you gonna make Dune 3? And he's like, I mean, I'll only make it if the story is there. Like if it's like, you're making Dune 3, like stop. Just stop. Like,
meanwhile, he's like typing on his laptop as soon as he gets back to his hotel.
I know. Hans is like, I've already have the soundtrack completed. It's been done for 2 years. I can't wait to show you.
It's absolute nonsense that you would stop with Dune 2, like after it's gonna probably sniff $1 billion ultimately at the end of its theatrical run. Like, get out of here.
Right.
And it really could end with 3. I have my theory about what they're going to do with Chani's character that Zendaya plays. Zendaya, I've called her both, whatever. And I just wonder, like, I have this thought. So we'll see.
Yeah, if you want, go check out our Dunecast if you want to hear what some of those thoughts are. Yeah. We went a little hard with what we thought were going to happen, but I don't know. I'm okay with it.
We went a little hard with people get Dune upset in general.
Yeah, I think one way or another, the franchise is in good hands.
Agreed. Yeah. Well, from Dune to DC, we have I, Tonya, Cruella, and Dumb Money director Craig Gillespie, who will head the Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow movie for DC Studios. Studio co-chair James Gunn has alluded that his vision for this iteration of Supergirl will be a more serious take than the recent portrayal on the CW Supergirl series. The film does not currently have a release date. Does anyone think the team behind Supergirl is as unstoppable as the character herself?
Yeah, I'm excited for this. I was already excited for Supergirl. Everything that we've heard about it, it's just like knowing that it's going to be a darker take, that Supergirl is going to make her debut in James Gunn's Superman, and that for all intents and purposes, it doesn't seem like she's going to be a side character. It seems like she's really going to factor in to the story there. And, you know, we'd been talking about how James Gunn had been making like various casting decisions, and we, you know, recently learned that Ana de Guevara, the writer who was, you know, attached to the previous version that was still attached to the DCEU, she got to make the transition to this new one. So it really felt like, you know, there was some synergy despite the lack of a director. And it often had me wondering, like, do they have a director in mind that is kind of, you know, making some of these decisions alongside James Gunn? And I don't know if that was the case with Craig Gillespie or not, but I think he's a phenomenal choice. Like, you look at his filmography here with I, Tonya and Cruella, where you're taking, you know, on the surface very unlikable and misunderstood like female characters, but finding a way to make them relatable and likable, and ultimately you root for them. That sounds awesome, and that sounds like a great way to take the Supergirl character, especially with what we're hearing about this being a darker take. And like, Supergirl, I think there's a lot more there with that character that could be explored than what we've seen on screen, per se. Like, the fact that she was older than her cousin and had this responsibility placed upon her, and now she's having to kind of live in his shadow. Like, I imagine that creates some real angst, and kind of like losing that purpose has to do something to someone. So I think Craig Gillespie has the talent. I like Dumb Money. I did think the weakest thing about it was the screenplay. So I don't know if Craig Gillespie is going to have any writing or screenplay credits on this thing, but he is a strong director. And if James Gunn and Ana de Guevara are the only ones doing the writing, I think all in all, we have a really strong team behind the camera, and that excites me.
Yeah, I'm really fascinated by the position that James Gunn is in here, being somebody who has been a director who writes and then directs his movies, and then being pulled into the MCU and kind of being under that umbrella of Kevin Feige. And we've talked a lot about, you know, what Feige has been able to accomplish in like bringing in creative people and letting them have a certain extent of creative control, but also guiding this like overall narrative of the MCU and kind of like bringing it together at certain points and stuff like that. Like, there's so many balls in the air that you're trying to juggle if you're in his position. And now James Gunn is sort of in that position, right? Like, he's starting this new universe. He is really the sole writer and director of Superman. So we're not really going to see it yet. But then this movie is where you're going to start to see that path split a little bit, right? Because you've got a new writer, you've got a new director, but he's still in charge of the vision of the universe. So he's kind of like, this is where we'll kind of get to see, like, I guess, the Feige chops that he has a little bit in terms of like how hands-on is he in the creative aspect. Like, we know Kevin Feige is not super, super hands-on in the creative aspect. Like, he really does give his directors that he hires a lot of creative control, but still he has to have his thumb on the pulse of like where to take these overall art, like overarching stories. And so I'm just really curious to see like how James Gunn does in that position, like as somebody who he's been a creative person, he's been in that role, and then he sort of kind of has to be like, you kind of have to like put a suit on him a little bit, right? Like whenever he's trying to like guide this Supergirl movie with a new director, new writer, but he cast Millie Alcock in the role, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like he cast and then he brought in a director, which is a little unorthodox. So I just think that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on. I think it's going to be a fascinating storyline with this DCU.
That's Rhaenyra Targaryen, the young Rhaenyra, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She's going to be like, okay. I loved Itania and I liked Cruella, so let's see. We'll see. Go ahead, DC. Don't bite off more than you can chew, James Gunn. Get your hand off the wheel. Don't micromanage.
I said I wasn't going to talk about this one, but I did just finish reading today the Superman comics that are some of the ones he's basing his Superman movie on, because I was syncing a database project at work and it literally took all day. And I was like, I guess I'll just read today. I was very productive if my boss is listening. And it is dark. Like there are some really dark themes there. So I think, Scotty, your take on the way Craig Gillespie directs certain movies is probably the right direction for this, because I think we saw a little bit of dark Supergirl in The Flash with Sasha Kaye, but
right.
I think we wanted more of that. It was really pretty compelling, and so hopefully that is the direction they're going.
Yeah, she was a better part of that film, whatever you want to call whatever the hell that was.
Yeah.
It depends on who you ask. Yeah, Stephen King, Tom Cruise.
They thought it was fantastic.
Well, yeah. Of course they did. Hey,
money can make you say anything.
Yeah. While Tom Cruise is pretending to eat popcorn.
That's right. Jumping on a couch somewhere going, flash.
I'm a person.
He's putting the popcorn in his mouth and for sure like turn around spitting it into a napkin like afterwards.
Maybe it just comes out the back of his head like out the little door. Yeah. We love Tom Cruise.
We do love Tom Cruise.
We do. We also love The Matrix.
Do we?
We do, but how much do we? So, Warner Brothers recently announced that a fifth Matrix movie is currently in development. Filmmaking duties will no longer land with Lana or Lily Wachowski. Instead, Drew Goddard. Nominated for an Oscar for his screenwriting on The Martian, is in charge. But have no fear, Lana Wachowski is on board as an executive producer. Details about the plot, including if franchise stars Carrie Ann Moss and Keanu Reeves will return, are not available. Can another new Matrix movie retake the box office?
You know, when I saw this news, I was immediately just like, my first question was why? Like, why are we creating this film? The last Matrix movie was like maybe one of the most glaring examples of like someone being asked to do a movie that they don't want to do and then doing it anyway. And like how it came, like that movie was off the rails. I felt like, we didn't really talk about it when it came out, but I feel like that was kind of the consensus. Like even people who are like hardcore fans of this franchise and like stick up for it were like, what are we doing here? Like after they watched this movie. So I was really shocked by this. Like I just kind of figured, after watching the last one, like that was the nail in the coffin. We were done with this franchise. Of course, that original Matrix movie is what it is. It's culturally hugely significant, like regarded as you know, one of the most impactful sci-fi movies of all time, and it deserves that. Like when it came out, it came out at a particular time. It said particular things, like you know, it had magic, and it just seems like ever since it's just kind of been this like weird trotting of trying to recapture it, and now we're on Matrix 5 and it's almost 30 years or whatever since the last Matrix, or I don't know when the first Matrix came out off the top of my head, but
1999.
So we're coming up on it, but yeah, it's weird getting old, but yeah, I'm looking at this and it's just, I love The Martian. I thought it was good, but it's also based on a book. Like it's not, you're not coming up with an original idea. You're taking an idea, you're adapting it. Like, I don't know about this. It would take me a lot of convincing to get me to feel like there is a necessity for a Matrix 5, just where I'm at right now.
So, well, we're talking about Dune. Oh, I mean The Matrix. Sorry. I don't have a lot to say to this. I don't know. I don't think it's going to, you know, even if you're not going to have Lana and Lily, it's going to probably take something out of it. Executive producer is not the role I want for them or either of them in the film, because I feel like they are the heart of what The Matrix is. And I don't know if if they go for another story, another plot, new characters, maybe try to build this world, since, you know, Hollywood can't stop doing that. Just beat the dead horse until, you know, it stops spilling out money. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, I'll watch it. I'll be there, but I'm not going to enjoy it.
There's one thing Hollywood hates. It's giving up on a franchise. They hate it. They hate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, Matrix Resurrection was not good. You know, I could kind of see how they thought they were doing something smart with being like really meta, like, oh, let's take the original film trilogy and make it a video game franchise. And we'll have Neil Patrick Harris come in and be like, you know, this master program, kind of like our new Agent Smith or what have you. And I think they even got the guy that, you know, portrayed the King from Hamilton. Like, he was kind of like the new proto Agent Smith and everything like that. So, you know, there were some pieces there, but they just totally failed in the execution. Like, they dropped the ball in every place that you could towards the end there. So, like, I look at this idea of a new film, and I do focus in on Drew Goddard. And I think, like, Drew Goddard is an absolute talent. He was the showrunner for the first season of the Netflix Daredevil show, and you know, right up until like
good,
I think you know,
good.
A couple of weeks before that show came out, like, he was heartbroken that he had to depart that project. And if I'm not mistaken, he was also a writer on A Cabin in the Woods. So he, you know, he worked with Joss Whedon, which is not a name that we want to bring up too often around here, but I think if you look at that movie, you can see an example of like some strong and some smart writing. So I do expect, with the reception to Resurrections, like, I don't think you can have a Matrix movie without having Keanu Reeves in some capacity. I expect Lawrence Fishburne to show up, because he seems willing to show up in pretty much anything and everything. And I think you'll probably get Carrie Ann Moss back as well. But I would not be surprised if they did focus in on kind of like a younger cast, like we've seen so many requels do, where like you have like the passing of the torch from the tried and true to a new group of up-and-comers. And I think like that approach could work. And while I think The Matrix looms large in all of our hearts, I think if you look at like the younger part of Generation Z and the upcoming Generation Alpha, I don't think they have that same, you know, level of endearment to The Matrix that we have. So this might be their foot in the door.
No, it's an old person movie. Of people born in, I mean, really, like they, like
we're
they
old.
Shut your mouth. That movie came out 10
we're
years
old.
Ago.
Yeah, the 90s were 10 years ago.
That was one of the first DVDs I ever had.
Oh, nice. Did it suck you into The Matrix?
Do you know how many times I watched the bank scene over and over? Chunk, ka chunk. Oh, loved it.
I feel like The Matrix movies, I mean, after the first one, none of them really do it for me. And like, I don't even think I could get through number three. I was like, you know what? I give up. Like, I'm just not interested in it anymore. And I didn't see the fourth. And so, yeah, it's interesting. Well, we know why they're doing this, ka-ching. But also, like, the Wachowskis, I mean, this is in their DNA, basically. And so at least one of them is staying on to executive produce, which to me means they're not, you know, I mean, they're not like cutting ties with it, and they're not just saying this is a dead franchise because Resurrection did so poorly. I don't know. I feel very ambivalent about this.
There has to be like, not, it's not a reboot, but like you said, Scott, I think you said passing the torch, like that has to be what you're going to do if it's going to work. Like, if you try to make a true Matrix 5 coming off of what Resurrections was, there's just going to be hardly any interest in it. But if you can convince people like, hey, okay, this is, it's still connected, it's not a reboot, we're not doing that, but like, for our new century that we're in, for the problems in our society, that just like this one did 30 years ago, where it was kind of a commentary on where the world was going, this is going to do the same, but in a different way. And we're going to pass it off in a way to these like new characters, kind of like sort of what the Star Wars sequel trilogy tried to do, right? Like, exactly. So you're bringing in you're bringing in the old characters, but just for a minute, just so they can pass it to the new characters. But who knows what will ultimately happen with it. They're calling it Matrix 5, so.
For now.
Yeah. Mm.
All right. Before we head out for an ad break, we want to remind you all that we have a Patreon for $4 a month, basically $1 a week of this show. You can be one of our patrons. We do some fun stuff over there, including patron-specific polls, which are different than our Spotify polls. Like this week's was, do you want more behind-the-scenes teases from Marvel, like Florence Pugh gave us? And overwhelmingly, the patrons do. So I hope they keep doing that over at the MCU. We also just like respond to you over there. You can interact with us a little more personally. And so if you think the show and the work we put into it is worth $4 a month, we would surely appreciate your support. And that's patreon.com/multiverse newscast.
I do like the image, though, of like the one guy reading the poll and being like, you know what? Like, I'm good. Like, I don't need more.
There was
that.
It was an 80-20 vote. So
you keep your secrets, no, Gandalf. You keep your secrets.
Yeah. They want to be lied to.
All right. All right. We're going to pause for a quick break, but we'll be right back.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Hopefully you had a nice little break there. Let us hear from the people and discuss our Spotify poll from this week. So last week we asked, which of the following possible sequels would you go see? And the choices were National Treasure 3, Freaky Friday 2, both, or neither. And taking the cake with a whopping 50.9% is National Treasure 3.
People really want to see that Nick Cage.
I'm sorry. Are you telling me that? Is this going to be a Lindsay Lohan?
Oh, yeah.
I'm back for Freaky Friday. Yeah. If anybody missed me.
Are we serious? Is she serious? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's very heavily rumored.
Negotiations are happening.
That wallet's probably getting a little light after all these years. You know, she's going to have to start doing. It's only a matter of time before there's another Parent Trap.
That's right.
But like now it's her. Oh, but now it's her kids or something. Like that's happening. It's got to happen.
I would watch that though. I got that VHS for Christmas when I was 12 years old, and I watched it 12 times that day. And my brother was like, I'm going to murder you.
I mean, what's the math on that 12 times in a day?
It's like, I don't know, man, but I did.
That's great. I did find it pretty funny that the choice of neither got more votes than either Freaky Friday by itself or both.
Yeah.
A lot of people were just neither. Like, nah, I'm good.
I wouldn't go see that, but I will always show up in some way for Nicolas Cage. So is he involved in the third one is the question. And if he is, then I will watch it at home.
Okay.
It was really just Jerry Bruckheimer running his mouth last week, or was it 2 weeks ago?
Oh, no.
Yeah. He was like, yeah, I'm making a Pirate 6 and I'm making a National Treasure 3. And we were like, okay, Jerry.
Oh, Jesus, Jerry, sit down.
Get back to me when we got a Con Air 2 in the works.
See that I would get Malkovich. Somehow he survived.
That'd be great.
I am John Malkovich.
Well, that's all you have to say is somehow he survived.
That's right. That's all you got to do.
It worked in Star Wars. It can work here.
30-year spoiler alert for Con Air, I guess. That's your fault if you haven't seen Con Air.
We'll get an email that's like, I was been planning on watching Con Air this whole time.
I was going to watch it on July 14th, and you ruined it.
Sorry, not sorry.
I think we also have to consider that, like we talked about the Matrix kind of dating us a little bit, that liking National Treasure and Freaky Friday kind of dates us a little bit. Like if you're, you know what I mean? Like if you were born in the 2000s or something, or even like the late 90s, like you probably don't care about National Treasure or Freaky Friday. Yeah. So they were probably like, you know what I mean? You were probably a kid when they were coming out. So
those,
I think that's part of it
kids.
Too.
Man.
All righty. Now we're going to get into the lightning round. Oh, yeah, the lightning round. And the way that works is we have a list of topics here that did not make it as features, but we still want to touch on them. So I'm going to run down these topics. And when one of my co-hosts or myself hear one that, you know, we're particularly passionate about, we get to buzz in with our name. That is our way of laying claim to that story, and we get to give our take, and we are all allotted one opportunity for a rebuttal. So with that out of the way, let's get into it. First up, last week in a win for the Walt Disney Company and CEO Bob Iger, all of Disney's director nominees were elected by shareholders, rebuffing the activist investor Nelson Peltz, who had been running a high-profile campaign to put himself and former Disney CFO Jay Rasulo on the company's board.
Haley, first of all, and I didn't say this when we talked about this story last time, but activist investor is a horrible phrase, and I really hate it. Like, it really makes me want to rise up and just, like, take down the rich. You know what I'm talking about? Get out of here with that, activist investor. And so I'm glad that Nelson didn't make it. And I think it was pretty obvious that he wasn't going to. He was just kind of stirring up a lot of ruckus. I do hope that eventually Iger can find a way to cut ties with that investing group, which also includes the guy whose name I can't remember now.
Perlmutter?
Yeah.
Ike Perlmutter? Yeah. That guy. yeah, because I think he's, you know, he's kind of the snake in the hen house. We don't like that.
No, we don't. All right. Officially released set photos from Daredevil Born Again confirmed long-standing rumors that Jon Bernthal will reprise his role as the Punisher in the new Disney Plus series.
Ashley, yes. Bring it on. Cannot wait. Jon Bernthal, daddy, let's do this. I'm so excited. I saw a couple other photos that I'm not going to spoil on here, but if you know somebody who might kind of look like me, I saw her. I'm so excited. This is good. It's turning out to be everything that I wanted it to be. The only thing that I really need them to do with this series is keep the goddamn intro music from Netflix, please.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Ooh, good point.
Scotty with a rebuttal, at the risk of creating some controversy here on the show.
Let's go do it.
We did get to see Daredevil in his full garb, and keep in mind these are set photos, but they are official set photos. So the lighting could be off, the saturation could be off. But I, for one, I love seeing the saturation on that red turned all the way up.
No, I didn't like it. You know why?
It's too red.
It looks like it looks like Deadpool's suit, and I don't like that.
Yeah. Oh.
So, but you're, you know, Scotty, you're right. They're not done yet.
No, they're not.
We
and, you know,
tone it down.
Yeah.
Welcome to Suit Talk, where we're talking all things suits.
Punisher's suit looked amazing. I liked how the one side of the eye was kind of like faded out, and then the other eye on the other side was all there. I was like, yes, bring that back. You got to take that back from the insults, because I refuse. People are like, can I wear my Punisher shirt still? I'm like, yes, you can. You got to take it back.
That's right. Reclaim it.
I saw the picture. I guess we're all just rebutting here. I saw the picture of of him, and I was like, man, he looks exactly like he did in the show. And then I saw the side by side of him and the Punisher, and I was like, man, I didn't realize how long ago that show was. Like, he looks so much younger, and you just don't notice it unless it's side by side. But he looks great. Like, he looks like grizzled and old, and in a you know, tough old way, I guess, if you know what I'm saying. but it's,
we know what you're saying.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm pumped for it. I'm excited, but I'm kind of shocked at how much I'm kind of shocked at how much they're leaning into the Defender stuff, because I just didn't expect it. Like, I didn't expect that much Defenders connectivity. So that's exciting, though. It's cool.
Mm-hmm. Amazon MGM Studios are currently developing a Legally Blonde spinoff series inspired by the popular film franchise. Reese Witherspoon and her production company Hello Sunshine will produce, although it is unclear at the moment if she will reprise her role in the series in any capacity.
Haley, Jake sent us this and I was like, what? Why? But this is what Reese Witherspoon is doing right now. Like, she's still acting, but she is definitely all in the producing world because one of the ways she's making a ton of her money, I think I've mentioned this before, is that she's buying like book rights from authors. And she's like, yes, I will buy your rights and I'll buy them for a lot of money, but you can only I can make these movies then. And it's really interesting. She's raking it in. I mean, go Reese.
Yeah, good for you.
Go get that bag.
But why?
Rebuttal. So like then next time about. She gets pulled over, she could be like, don't you know who I am? I'm a producer. Whatever she said when she got arrested for that DUI. He's like, yeah, I know who you are. Get in the back of the car.
Oh, no.
This is kind of like what we talked about when we talked about a Suits, not reboot, but like continuation or whatever they're doing with Suits. It's like,
right.
Okay, so like the whole thing about Suits was the guy was like, oh, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm really smart, so I'm going to memorize all these books and you'll never know I'm not a lawyer. Okay, that's why it worked. But like, do you just do that again? Because that's not going to happen again. Like, it's not going to be, so you got to reinvent it. It's like with this too, it's like the whole thing of Legally Blonde. Like, can you just do that again? Like, oh, well, she just made it into law school. Again,
I guess it'll be like a courtroom procedural. Like, that's kind of funny,
yeah.
I guess.
Well, they've described it as a continuation. Like, it's not a reboot. It's supposed to take place. I don't know.
Elwoods has
now.
Her own practice. Oh, judge. Judge Elwoods. I like that. Brucer will be the bailiff. I got the Legally Blonde deep cut.
I was like, you're way too quick on all of the the Legally
Makes
Blonde.
Makes me want a hot dog real bad.
Classic.
All right. Netflix's live-action Avatar, The Last Airbender series, is undergoing a change in leadership. Variety has learned that Albert Kim, who developed the series and served as showrunner on season one, is stepping down. Christine Boylan and Jabbar Rahsaani will lead the show as executive producers going forward. Netflix has already announced the show will be renewed for 2 more seasons, concluding with season 3. Scotty, I have not checked out the live action show yet, but it does seem like, you know, reception was positive for the most part. And this is a show that has already had a fair amount of, you know, leadership changes behind the scenes. Like, the I know people that were, you know, attached to the animated series were originally attached and they kind of left like during the development of season one. So I'm going to, you know, have some optimism and hope that this is a move for the best and kind of hope that like everybody is kind of on board for this and that the show is just going to increase in its scale and the epicness of the story that's being told. And, you know, maybe the people that you know, were showrunners in season one aren't up to task and they acknowledge that hopefully that's, you know, the situation. This is all amicable, but you know, whatever comes out, this is a show that has a fervent fan base and I hope they do right by them. Olivia Wilde, Margot Robbie, and X-Men producer Simon Kinberg are joining forces for a feature adaptation of Evangeline, a comic book character from Deadpool co-creator Rob Liefeld. Wilde will direct. Robbie's production company Lucky Chap, along with Kinberg, will produce.
Haley, this is interesting. This is a Marvel character that Marvel does not own still. It's actually owned by Paramount, so take that for what you will. I'm lukewarm on Olivia Wilde as a like person in general. And I don't know that she's super well regarded with her filmmaking stuff. I think she's hit or miss. It depends on who you are, if her stuff is for you or not. But Margot Robbie being attached to it gives it a lot of cachet at this point in time with her Barbie success and all the other things that she's been in and has produced successfully. So between her and then the X-Men producer Simon Kinberg, it could be cool, but like, I don't know anything about this character. So I don't know. It's kind of out of left field.
Yeah.
You mean Liefeld?
It was right there.
Like, she's a super, like, isn't she like the Lord's sword? Like, I feel like it's a religious, not religious, but like she's like, you know, one of God's top warriors. Like, I don't know. I'd have to look.
Oh, with a name like Avenge, I could
read
see that.
Beforehand, but if what I remember of Evangeline, I believe that it is like, you know, she's like an angel or something like that. And that'll be a very interesting story. It reminds me of, what was that one with the guy who plays Vision, like Legion or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I just wonder if
it's
going to be dark or what they're going to do. But that's an interesting character to be like, that one. Let's do her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maggie Gyllenhaal took to Instagram last week to share the first images of her upcoming film, The Bride, which stars Christian Bale as Frankenstein's monster and Jesse Buckley as his bride. The Bride is set in 1930s Chicago and puts a spin on the iconic Frankenstein lore. Gyllenhaal has assembled an all-star cast for the film. Starring opposite Bale and Buckley are Penelope Cruz, Peter Sarsgaard, and Annette Bening. The film's crew includes Joker cinematographer Lawrence
Ashley, let's go. Let's make Frank hot. Let's do this. I'm so excited. Just talk. We went hard about this on Bill and Ashley's Terror Theater about like how funny it is. It was like the Joker, Jared Leto's Joker meets, Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. I'm like, okay. But I think Haley brought up a really good point because Haley, remind me, what did you say? He said it was like traveled back in time.
Bill, yeah, your co-host Bill said that the log line was that Frankenstein travels to 1930s Chicago. That's the log line on the film.
A lonely Frankenstein.
Does that mean it's like a time travel thing? And also, does it mean that the monster is called Frankenstein? Like, there's a lot not known about it. It could be really wacky and interesting.
Yeah.
Sounds like it.
It does sound like it.
Bo Willimon, who is known for writing the Netflix political drama series House of Cards, has been tapped to write the script for James Mangold's upcoming Dawn of the Jedi Star Wars prequel film. Willimon has previously worked on season one of Andor.
Jay, I loved House of Cards when it was on. I started watching it from the beginning. I got a little off the rails at the end when Kevin Spacey, you know, kind of was seen as... he got kicked out of that show for a lot of reasons, and it got kind of just got a little weird at the end. But man, like when it was on its peak, like it was so must-see television. Like it was so good, and it was experimenting with like breaking the fourth wall in these like really cool ways, and like everybody was on their game, and the writing was so good. So like that gives me a lot of hope. He also wrote my favorite episode of Andor, which is No Way Out, which is the prison escape episode with Andy Serkis. Mm. Like he was the writer of that episode. So that gives me a lot of hope. So yeah, I've become a lot more intrigued by this movie all the time. We've heard it described as like a biblical epic of Star Wars. It's supposed to fill in a lot of gaps about the Force and the Jedi. It's supposed to go way, way back, like early prequel stuff. And it just, you know, this just ups the excitement level for me because this is legit talent that you're bringing in to bring this thing together.
Absolutely. A24 has dropped the first trailer for Maxine, the final chapter in the acclaimed X-horror trilogy from Ty West that stars Mia Goth. The film releases in theaters on July 5th. Scotty. I was thrilled with this trailer. This has been really cool to watch this, you know, trilogy come to fruition here. It was kind of a first for A24 to have a sequel in the first place, and we learned that X and Pearl were kind of filmed back to back. So this one, I saw some things that I did not expect in this one, like the 1985 setting. We got a still image of the Bates Motel. So the fact that it seems like it's going to be connected to the world of Hitchcock, and the fact that there is a seeming serial killer on the loose and it is not Mia Goth's character. At least that's what the trailer is leading us to believe. I have, you know, I have theories, I have speculation, but the Night Stalker. Is that based on a real serial killer?
They said it in the trailer. Oh, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
Oh, see, I didn't.
Richard Ramirez.
Okay. I've got lapses when it comes to my true crime history. So I didn't know the Night Stalker was based on
a real
thing.
That's why I'm here, baby.
Thank you.
Rebuttal.
Educate me.
Yeah. I'm very excited for this. I think that the fact that they're putting the Night Stalker in there does bring this interesting dynamic to it that kind of reminds me of a little bit of the first one. I think that this one looks like it might be the best of all three.
Sure.
It looks just like a really solid movie. And I'm hit or miss with Mia Goth, but that trailer... Yeah. She looks like she's bringing her A game, and you know I have faith in A24. So let's see where this story goes. I'm really excited.
It also seems like they're giving Ty West like a lot more of a budget because we have Giancarlo Esposito,
yes.
Kevin Bacon. Sorry, the last story. The last story there.
Redemption tour.
Kevin Bacon, Halsey. So like in the previous movies, we had, you know, Brittany Snow was kind of a recognizable name, Jenna Ortega, Kid Cudi. But then in Pearl, I think, you know, David Kornsett was the only other recognizable name, and he was not a recognizable name at that point.
And now he's Superman.
That's right.
True.
Disney has updated its film release schedule and pushed some release dates further into the future. The Mandalorian and Grogu will now debut on May 22nd, 2026, while Toy Story 5 is set for June 19th, 2026. Tron: Ares will open on October 10th, 2025. The Amateur, a spy thriller with Rami Malek and Rachel Brosnahan, will open April 11th, 2025. It had originally been slated to debut on November 8th, 2024. Night Bitch, a comedy that...
Woo!
Sorry, that one threw me for a loop there.
Night Bitch!
Night Bitch, a comedy horror film that stars Amy Adams, will open in limited release on December 6th, 2024. Finally, the live-action adaptation of Moana has been pushed to July 10th, 2026. Lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
I didn't know Amy Adams was going to play me in a movie.
I think that, I'm just here to say I think Night Bitch needs to be on Bill and Ashley's Terror Theater for sure.
A memoir.
Hey, it comes out this year. The holiday this year.
I don't know what this release schedule, you know, this is just what it is, I think. Things just change. And some of the stuff we haven't talked about on here at all, but the thing that surprises me the least is the live action adaptation of Moana, since they announced that the animated sequel to that movie is coming out this year.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, that's weird.
From what I understand, that first Moana has been like a mainstay on Disney Plus since it was available. So Disney is all in
on
Moana.
It's a good one.
Yeah. All right. The Game of Thrones prequel series, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, The Hedge Knight, has found its lead actors. The upcoming HBO series is based around the characters Sir Duncan the Tall, otherwise known as Dunk, and his squire known as Egg, featured in the Tales of Dunk and Egg, books written by George R.R. Martin. Peter Claffey has been cast as Duncan, while Dexter Soul Ansel has been cast as Egg. Claffey most recently appeared in Apple TV's Bad Sisters, and Ansel most recently appeared in The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Jay, the Game of Thrones world has shown that its prequel game is strong with House of the Dragon. And we got news, I believe it was today, that Kit Harington came out and said that the Jon Snow series that has been talked about for like 5 years is just gone. It's off the table. They're not doing it. They can't find a story. So it's like, it seems like they're sort of realizing something, which is like, we can't really take this franchise that way because people hated the way it ended for the most part, and it's just like there's not a lot of interest and it's
sure
a sore
did.
spot. But we can take it that way and we can do a lot of cool stuff with it. So yeah, I mean, this is base, it's not out of left field. It's from a series of books from George R.R. Martin, and there's a lot to work with there.
Rebuttal, I will say, from people I know who read the books, this is so many people's favorite book across the board, which I thought was interesting when people kind of told me what it was about. So, yeah, go ahead, Game of Thrones. I'm going to be there.
Westeros runs on Dunkin' Egg.
Oh, jeez.
All right.
We'll workshop it.
Yeah, there's something there. All right. A pedigree copy of Action Comics number 1, featuring the first appearance of Superman, sold for $6 million at that auction on Thursday.
God. Haley, believe it or not, this is the most a comic has ever gone for. I can't remember what the last one that was in the article they talked about that went for $5.3 million was, but it was probably something like this. I just think that's so crazy. It's crazy.
Was it Nicolas Cage?
We don't know. It's just wild. Yeah. It is wild to me that people spend that much money on these old comics. I get it. And Superman is like so many people's favorite superhero, you know. Having just read some of the comics, I have such an odd take on Superman, but I get why people love him overall, but this is nuts.
Robert Downey Jr. told Esquire magazine he would be glad to return to the MCU, saying, "It's too integral a part of my DNA. That role chose me. And look, I always say, never ever bet against Kevin Feige. It's a losing bet. He's the house. He will always win.
Ashley? Oh, his publicist called him and told him to shut his mouth.
Yeah, this is so different than the tune he was singing during award season. We talked about it over on Bingers. I went on an unnecessarily long.
He's like, you mean me, Oscar winner Robert Downey Jr., whatever it turns
out. Literally.
See you. Happy birthday, RDJ. You shut your mouth.
Yeah. I guess that makes me kind of realize that I'm the layman, because I remember I didn't realize that there was kind of like this, like, you know, disfavor with the way Robert Downey Jr. was conducting himself until you pointed it out to me. So I feel like by the time that, like, that became apparent to me, it became apparent to Robert Downey Jr. and his people. So they're like, okay, we gotta start, you know, fixing
this. I gotta walk
thing.
That back. And I think that this is truly how he feels. I think he just got caught up in the prestige of award season. He was getting award after award for Oppenheimer, and he's not somebody who's humble. We've talked about that too. He's got his ego, and so he was being pumped up by freaking Bully Blunt all the time, and then, you know, they were acting like Cillian Murphy was their pet, I feel like. And I think he was just caught up in stuff, and I think ultimately, yeah, this is truly what he feels about the MCU. And he should, because that franchise took such a risk on him.
It would be kind of annoying, though, to, like, be up for an Oscar and, like, everybody just keeps asking you about Iron Man, like, over and over and over again. Like, you going to do Iron Man again? It's like you've done it for 15 years. You're just like, can I just do something else?
I'd be like, just send me the
check. Look at Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, good point. Good point.
Maybe I'm just crotchety.
Quit being crotchety,
well,
Jay.
You are crotchety, Jay, but that's okay.
That's true.
You are crotchety, Jay.
I accept.
All right. Netflix dropped a trailer for Dead Boy Detectives, a show set in the Sandman universe.
Haley, this looks so weird, but this is connected to the Sandman show on Netflix. And so these comics, I'm sorry, the characters were first introduced in the Sandman Omnibus, issue 25, I believe, but they have their own standalone limited series as well. We're going to cover it over on Source Pages, a 2018 series, and it looks fun. They, like, are detectives for dead people. It's not that they're dead. They're helping dead people. So it's kind of got that, like, there's like
the Hardy
a movie.
Boys.
Yeah, kind of Hardy Boys-ish, but, you know, sort
was
of
was Ryan
fun...
Reynolds in it? What are you? It was Ryan Reynolds and Josh Brolin, weren't they, like, people?
Oh, you're
people?
Thinking of RIPD?
Sure, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. So, it's a fun concept, and we see a character from the Sandman show up in the trailer, so very cool.
Ooh. Oh, rebuttal, I love the Sandman series so much. we were talking about, I love Neil Gaiman, everything he does, so bring in more of the Sandman universe. Just keep him coming. But can I have the second season of the Sandman at this point now, Netflix? Please.
They're working. They filmed it, I think.
Wunmi Mosaku, best known for her work in Marvel Studios' Loki and HBO's Lovecraft Country, has joined Michael B. Jordan in the untitled supernatural horror thriller that Ryan Coogler is directing for Warner Brothers. Scotty, I recall the first time we talked about this partnership between Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler, I suggested that I had heard that maybe it was a vampire film that we were going to take on here, but the addition of Wunmi Mosaku, I think, is an excellent addition. I have only seen her in the two properties that are mentioned here, Loki and Lovecraft Country, but she was an absolute standout in both of those, and I think you get to really see her range on display as Hunter, you know, what, B-15?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Hunter, I was like, B12, that's a vitamin. B15. She's very stern and, you know, dedicated to her work, but shows, you know, slowly but surely that she's got some real compassion. And from what I recall in her character in Lovecraft Country, she's a little bit more of a wild card and wears her heart on her sleeve. So, you know, whatever character she's portraying in this film, I think she's going to lend a lot of talent. The Popcorn Bucket saga continues as Regal Cinemas unveiled the official Garfield movie Popcorn Buckets. I can't believe I'm saying
Ashley, is it a cat's asshole? Like, what is it?
Yeah, you lift up his tail and you get the popcorn. Yeah, it's
cursed.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not serious.
I would have believed you. You could have told me that, and I wouldn't
want to
tell people.
Yeah. I have no idea about the functionality of this thing, but it looks like a theater, like cushioned theater chair with just Garfield's head on it.
That's my takeaway. Like, where is the popcorn? Like, it doesn't, like, I don't know how to open it. At least with the Dune bucket, there was a hole. Like, I knew where the popcorn was. Like, this one's just him sitting in a chair. Like,
Where do I lift his head up? Like, where's the popcorn? It's
I want to know. This is, we say this all the time. Like, we just can't have nice things in this country. I swear to God, no. Because the Dune popcorn bucket was a thing, but it's a singular thing. And now everybody, they did it for Ghostbusters. They're doing it for this. And I think we threw the Jabba the Hutt one from
Jabba
Disneyland.
The Hutt, yeah.
Oh, right.
Oh, my God. Stop. Everybody stop.
That's
did
Hollywood,
it look just
though.
Like the Dune one?
The Jabba one? No,
no,
it's
like,
grosser.
He opened
like,
in the middle. It was weird.
It's
yeah.
disgusting. if we get enough patrons, somebody, maybe Jay, could do a series on the popcorn buckets.
I want to do a series of YouTube videos where I just review the popcorn buckets like one by one. It's
I'll
just
do
me.
It.
Like, it's just me. And I'm just like sitting here just so like, funny. Okay, we're going to rate this one by functionality. We're going to rate this one by like look. You know, like, just kind of like take it like uber serious.
Like, oh my God, totally do it. You got to have a science lab coat on and stuff.
We need to start giving. We need to start like giving one away to the patrons. Like that'd be a great giveaway.
Oh
like we will be giving away a raffle for the Garfield popcorn bucket.
That's a great idea. I don't know. I think the Dune bucket is still the most popular.
Oh, everything else yeah. is living in the shadow of the Dune popcorn bucket. Yes,
you have it. Is it right next to you?
Can we see it
like
again?
Usual.
Can I see you put your hand in it slowly, and then take it back out?
There's really like not just once.
Yeah, there's no video this week.
And then can you go call me Donnie?
Yeah, we would have to not safe for work tag this if this was a video.
Amazing. Yeah.
I am shocked. I've never seen you reach into the bucket. I'm shocked by how little room you have. Like there's really functionality.
That's
it's got to be real low.
Like,
it's got to be
can't
real
even
low.
Get the popcorn out.
How am I supposed to? And then I gotta really white knuckle.
It is not for popcorn. Okay, it does not care how much popcorn's in there.
This is a microcosm of the problem in Hollywood, which is like a thing happens, which is organic and cool, and we think is funny, and it's a joke, and they're like, "You want it again? You want it again? You want it again?"
You want us
and they
to
keep
ruin
trying to
it
do
for
it.
You?
Yeah, like please come by this one too. Of course, you want a Garfield bucket because you wanted a Dune bucket. It's like you don't get the joke.
Oh my God.
You know, you're just trying. Like you just so think funny. We're just gonna hit buy. It's not the same thing. This is why they put Morbius back in theaters because we said it's Morbin time, and we thought it was funny,
like,
and they didn't get
oh,
it.
You like it? You like that? You like it? They like it. Everybody, they you, like it.
They
put
think
it back.
It's funny.
And then it bombed harder.
Oh, gosh. That was great.
And this is exciting. Right when we thought we were going to get out of here, we have a last minute addition to the lightning round, which, you know, very well could be a feature of its own. The trailer for Joker Folie à Deux dropped while we were recording. So we all went and watched it, and we are here to give our immediate takes. So who wants to kick things off?
I will. You know when you watch a trailer for something and you're like, oh, that movie was made specifically for me. I'm going to love everything about this. And it's going to be pretty hard to be amiss for me. I'm thrilled. I think everybody looks great. I think what they're doing is interesting. It looks like she's in the asylum and not a doctor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is fun. So, yeah, let's go, Todd Phillips.
Yeah, we speculated a lot about the jukebox musical of this all. And to me, it looks like maybe some of this is happening in their heads and some of it's happening in real life. And it's cool because it's got like some La La Land in there. And
that's what I was
going to
say.
Classic musical themes and iconic things like that. That's very cool. This, I think, puts to rest any of the concerns, because I think us and even our listeners like voted on it like, I don't know about this. It looks really, really great.
Yeah, it looks like it's extremely self-aware of what it is and what it wants to be. The trailer works on a lot of levels. It like goes from being this kind of sweet, like two people connecting, and then it escalates into violence, and it mixes the two together, and they're smearing the makeup on their face and everything. I mean, it looks great. It looks like they had a vision and they executed it, and I'm excited to see more. I'm walking away really excited about this.
Yeah, I concur. This looks like, you know, masterclass filmmaking on display here. I do agree that one of the parts that I kind of honed in on is like how much of this is going to be fantasy versus reality, because there was the sequence where Arthur, I had completely forgotten that this version's this version of the Joker, his first name is Arthur. I've just been, you know, he was Joaquin's Phoenix is the Joker, but he's Arthur Fleck. He's running down the street and you can see what looks like he's being chased by himself, like from the first film, like the full get up there. So like, I'm thinking, you know, from a meta standpoint, is he like running away from himself? And he has the line later on, like, I'm not alone anymore. That's what's important. So like, as he, the first film, he was like seeking, you know, connection and something outside of himself. Now that he's finally got it, is it too much of a good thing? And we kind of see the spiraling and falling out of that. I suspect so, but it looks great. Do we think that was Joaquin Phoenix singing? Do we know?
It could have been, because we all know he has that great voice. He sings all of those Johnny Cash songs amazingly and Walk the Line.
Oh, that's a good call. Yeah, that's a good call.
And then you have Gaga. That's why when people are like, oh, I'm worried it's a musical, I was like, it's Gaga. What are you worried about? Like, honestly, I just, what we don't even get to see what they're going to do, but just that scene with them at the piano and then she's putting the gun in his face and she's wiping the lipstick. I'm like, okay, Harley Quinn.
Yeah. That's fine. Because like people were coming out saying it's a jukebox musical, we were like, what is that? How does that translate to this world? Which is pretty dark and depressing, but it looks like it's going to be great.
Yeah. He's such an unreliable narrator in the first movie that it doesn't surprise me that we're just going to have crazy. Because even to this day, there's some scenes that I'm like, did that happen? Did that not happen? We still don't really know. So go ahead and go crazy with this one. Like it, because then the sky's the limit. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Do we think Batman will make an appearance?
Well, which Batman would it be?
I don't think so. I mean, he was.
This seems like it fits in Matt Reeves' universe really well.
Well, but there is a Joker in that universe.
I know. Barry's in it, but like,
and Bruce Wayne was in the first Joker, but he was a boy. Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to watch it this weekend. Sorry.
Oh, I'm holding back just because you haven't seen it because I have a lot more that I can say.
All right. Well. Lest we tread into any more spoilery territory, let's just leave it on the fact that we are all very excited about this trailer and encourage you all, if you have not seen it, check it out and let us know what you thought.
Did you all like the first film?
Loved it. I haven't watched it since I saw it because it was a heavy experience, but I remember it very fondly.
Yeah.
Well, we should, the four of us, do bingers for this one and the new one. Calling it.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
That is how we do it. Just sneak in there.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I haven't seen it since it came out either, but I need to go back and watch it again before this for sure.
Oh, good. Yep, we're doing it then on the calendars.
Absolutely. Well, at the mention of bingers, Ashley, why don't you let the people know about what other stuff you have going on, other appearances, and whatever else creatively you're working on the interwebs.
Sure, you can find me at Bill and Ashley's Terror Theater. We just took on Ready or Not, and Haley was our guest in preparation for Abigail, which is coming out in 2 weeks. Vampire ballerina, let's go. So Haley's going to join us. Miss I'm not into horror movies. We're getting her. We found this little niche that she falls into.
I'll do anything for the Supreme Leader.
So, keep an eye out for Ready or Not and Abigail.
Very cool. And Haley, how about you? What else is going on?
Oh, so much. X-Men primers are now finished on Source Pages. We just dropped our last one. And like I said, we'll be reading some Dead Boy Detectives in a couple weeks, so that'll be fun. I got to join Ashley and Jeff on MCU Cast. We talked about our favorite musical scores of the Infinity Saga, and we raised Scotty's ire a little bit, apparently. We'll talk about it later.
Just a little.
It was me.
It was all of us. Yeah. And then, here every week, so. Woohoo.
All right. And Mr. Sisson, what's going on?
Outside of Multiverse News, you can find me Monday mornings on Commute the Podcast, where we cover three interesting topics in about 20 total minutes. So you can learn something new on your way to work.
We're fun. Thank you guys for having me. Also, by the way, really thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry about all my computer problems. Of course, I got to come in here hot with my 2014 laptop that is just dying. So thanks for dealing with me.
No, you're good. It was a delight to have you, and hopefully you'll come back. Maybe we could have you on for like a horror heavy Halloween episode or something like that. That'd be great.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. As for me, you can check me out over on Animation Deliberation. We're on a little bit of a hiatus, but we just got our Invincible season 2 review out there, and we're definitely excited to cover Bad Batch season 3 as well as X-Men 97. Loving it.
Woo-hoo.
All right. Too. And on behalf of Matthew Carroll, peace, and you stay classy, multiverse.